G'day, mate. Don't worry, I didn't come back from Australia sporting a super cool accent. I'm still an American slash quarter Canadian. But I'm just celebrating the fact that this is a special Australian episode of The Novelizers.
Don't want your popcorn, don't want your milk duds, don't want my shoes stuck in pools of sticky cola. Don't show me romance, don't show me fist fights, just show me words printed out under the book lights. Yeah, baby, novelize the movie. Give me sentences, paragraphs, and nothing to see. Yeah, novelize the movie. Write a book and turn it into a podcast.
But let's not get ahead of ourselves. For all our new throngs of fans down under, The Novelizers is a show where we take classic films like, oh, I don't know if you've ever heard of it in the Southeast Hemisphere, but something called Batman, The Dark Knight. And then we get TV comedy writers to turn it into an audiobook, which we get actors and comedians to narrate. Get it? Good. Now let's do it.
Hey, Dave. How's it going?
Hey, Stephen Levinson. Really great. Thanks for asking. How are you?
I got a little bit of a cold, but a little post-nasal drip, but people don't want to hear about that, probably.
I do, but that's my own hang-up. Yeah. Anyway, who do we have on the show this week?
A bunch of Australians.
I've been have to Australia.
What's it like?
It's amazing. I think of it as sort of a fun-in-the-sun England, which would probably get me punched in the face in actual Australia.
Well, that's kind of like the opposite of England.
Yeah, I'm a fan, though. I've been there twice, which is twice more than a lot of people.
Twice more than me. Well, maybe we'll go together tomorrow.
I would love that.
Let's do it. But before we do, who do we have on the show this week?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. We have Dave Bluestein. He's a comedian, improviser, and a 5-time award-winning TV comedy writer. And, yeah, he's from Australia. We've also got Robbie McGregor. He's a prolific actor and voice artist with screen credits as deep and as rich as his sexy, velvety baritone. Baz Luhrmann once called him the voice Australia trusts. But most Australians know him for his nightly delivery of the following program contains coarse language, adult themes, and nudity. He's also Australian, and I totally want to see that show he's talking about.
Me too.
And, we're not done yet.
No.
We've also got Rob Kuttner. He's an Emmy Award-winning comedy writer known for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and Conan. And he's also the co-producer of this podcast. He doesn't live in Australia, though. Not yet.
Can't go wrong with Rob Kuttner and some Australians. So before we get into it, where are we in the movie The Dark Knight?
I'm glad you asked, Stephen. Okay, at this point, Batman infiltrates Maroni's club and torches him for the Joker. But Maroni, get this, he doesn't budge. Batman stops Harvey from killing one of the Joker's henchmen. And probably some other stuff happens, but that's all I know, really.
That's enough. It's more than enough.
Fylander, don't even get me started.
Let's do it.
Robbie McGregor, use your deep, rich, sexy voice to novelize us. That's an explosion sound I made with my mouth.
Episode 13. The Heart Has Two Faces. The Batman prowled around the edges of the dance floor like a predatory fuckboy. He clung to the shadow, stalking his target. Around him, the youth of Gotham cavorted and twerked, champagne stems in hand, their sloppy tongues entwined. It must be nice, thought Batman. It must be nice to let go. Oh, if only he could. To open his jaded bat heart to the joys and frailties of human connection. To make contact with another soul beyond the vicarious frisson of violent combat. And in the morning, to have more than the bruises on his ribs and thighs as evidence of their time together, bruises that would yellow and disappear like the teeth of one of downtown Gotham's ice junkies. Perhaps in another life, another reality, he could be a kinder, gentler Avenger, one who could make cheeky puns and put the word bat in front of everything, perhaps even take on a ward. Yes, a little orphan boy he could play dress-ups with, who could inherit his fortune and aid him in his fight for justice against the criminal scum in this city. There would be no Batusi for this grim terror of the night. No, sir. Perhaps one day, but not today. Today was for beating the shit out of Sal Maroni. He could see Maroni now, across the dance floor, leaning back at his table, the unfortunate woman at his arm, trying desperately to get his attention.
Can't we go someplace quieter? We can't hear each other talk.
But like everyone else at Sal's place, she was there to be seen, not heard. She was a prop, a fur-lined cloak for Sal to don and toss off whenever the urge arose. That bastard. Sal leaned forward, squinting into the strobing gloom as a yell cut through the fuzz and grind of 90s slap bass and corporate techno. The bat's familiar shape made its way towards him, all pointy ears and oddly luscious lips, cutting down bodyguards and go-go dancers with the balletic grace of a punch-drunk goose. This is profoundly unfair, thought Batman, as a goon snuck up behind him and smashed a whiskey bottle over his head. Green Lantern never had to put up with this bullshit. Hal Jordan's all, a sentient mushroom is robbing banks on the moon. I guess I'll wave my magic ring and throw them into space jail. Hope they're not yellow. Pathetic. I'd like to see that emerald-suited ass candle deal with an actual crime for once, Batman muttered as he sent one of Sal Maroni's legally employed nightclub bouncers head first off the walkway, presumably to their death on the concrete dance floor below. I'd like to see him stay sane while making the streets of Gotham safer for children, he said to himself, pushing his fist so far into a thug's face that the skull morphed round his glove like a bone plushie or a businessman in a Bill Plimpton cartoon. Sal Maroni couldn't hear the fight, but he could feel the crunch of iron on Kevlar, of snapping septums and broken femurs, and just behind it, the bass notes of white male privilege, a self-righteous mouthfeel that stank of ninjutsu, Krav Maga, and Bat Humvee, as if that made better use of one's time and resources than improving Gotham City's social services. But Sal had tarried too long. The goons were down, and the dark night was upon him, gripping Sal by his monogrammed cotton lapels, yanking him to and fro like two long-haul sea captains locked in a passionate tryst. I want the Joker, growled Batman. What? Sal yelled back, pointing to his own ears, then up to the nightclub speakers. I can't hear you! I said,
the Joker!
Batman was reaching the limit of his vocal range. The trademark growl twisted into a teenage squeak. Sal shrugged and yelled back,
we only do bar snacks!
No! The Joker! Damn it!
They would need to find somewhere quieter. Somewhere they could hear each other talk. A few minutes later, after a violent leg-snapping interrogation that added absolutely nothing to the plot. Batman was flying in his gas-guzzling substitute Bat-penis across town to find District Attorney Harvey Dent. Dent was at an undisclosed location in an abandoned building that the Batman had no context for and no way of knowing how to locate. Even for the world's greatest detective, this was going to be a bit of a stretch. But Dent was different to other men. The Batman, and yes, even Bruce Wayne, found himself drawn to him, as if Dent's cosmic satellite of legislative justice had a hold on the GPS of his heart. And somehow, that magnetic pull was lifting him out of the shadows. As he shifted into ninth, Batman allowed himself to smile, the corners of his bat mouth turning ever so slightly upward. It felt good. After all, he was alone in the car. Maybe he could, Batusi. Gingerly and with extreme self-consciousness, the dynamic mono straightened his bat gloves into a V and passed them across one eye. Did anyone see? Of course not. The windows were tinted black and he was doing 120 in a built-up area. Unless the Riddler had bugged his bat buggy again. Screw it. He jabbed the bat stereo and turned the station to swinging 60s. Then, flicking the Batmobile over to autopilot, he gave into the music, jiggling and shimmying, his bat fingers flying past his bat face to the bat-tastic bat beat. And yes, why not put the word bat in front of everything? Why not? He was the bat boss of his bat damn self. Oh my God, what was this feeling? Joy, euphoria, whatever it was all thanks to Harvey. Dent was a man much like himself, who wanted only the best for Gotham City, but not from the shadows. Here was a district attorney who couldn't be corrupted, who was above the clawing talons of greed and revenge, a gallant paladin to Batman's shadowy assassin, the symbol of hope that Batman could never be, a man who Bruce Wayne dared to call a friend. Perhaps even something more. And yet, Harvey was engaged to Bruce's oldest friend. He and Rachel were happy, made each other happy, and that made Bruce happy too, thought the Batman, gripping the bat gear shift so tight it almost bat snapped off in his bat hand. He relaxed his grip. The truth was, it did make Bruce happy, and it gave the Batman the freedom to carve out a life of his own. Batman parallel bat-parked outside a condemned building in the Narrows. He quietly closed the door, the sotto deet-deet of his bat-car alarm sounding out a new day for Batman. A new day. For Bruce Wayne, this was the place. Batman chose an auspicious window to make his entrance, and saw Harvey Dent stooped over a bound and sobbing young thug, a gun to his temple, and flicked his lucky coin. Batman plucked it out of the air and spoke, his bat fury masking his deep hurt and bat disappointment. "You'd leave a man's life to chance," spat the Batman. "You'd throw everything we'd built on the toss of a coin," he growled, no longer caring if Dent understood the bat subtext.
The Joker killed Gordon and he's gonna kill Rachel. Batman shook his head. You're going to call a press conference in the morning. No one else will die because of me. Gotham needs you, he said, before vanishing into the night. Gotham needs you, Batman said again to himself, as he took the Batmobile off park and slammed his foot on the Batgas, a single tear trailing down the outside of his vigilante mask. Gotham needs you. And God damn it, Harvey Dent, I needed you too.
Thank you, Robbie McGregor, and we'll be back with more novelizers right after this.
So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone, or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
We're back. That's me, Dave, saying that. Every week on the show, we talk to someone who worked on the actual film, The Dark Knight. And this week, our own Kevin Carter interviewed the guy in charge of product placement. Hey, this podcast could use some product placement. If you're listening, Ben and Jerry's, give us a call. I would honestly do all these intros and outros while eating ice cream. Ben and Jerry's delicious ice cream. Maybe you send a couple truckloads of Chubby Hubby or fish food.
Fish food. Let's not give him a free ad until we get the ice cream.
Yeah. Pump the brakes, Ben and Jerry's. Anyway, let's hear that interview.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the interview portion of the Novelizers podcast. My name is Kevin Carter, and I am here with Baxter Lucid, who was that? Can you explain it, please? I don't know how to explain it, what you are.
Yeah, I'm what they call a brand manager, or I like to call it brand man.
Is it because of the whole theme song for Batman and stuff?
Yeah, you got that. I love it. Oh, I love it. We're on the same page.
Cool. I guess it's kind of self-explanatory on what you is, what a brand manager is. However, we'd like for you to explain it to our audiences who may not know what that is.
Love the question. Love you, mm-hmm. Kevin. Mm-hmm. Brand manager basically is someone who is responsible for the product integrations in the film or television or digital property. And in this case, we added a lot of ideas for products that it gave this Gotham City the dark, gritty feel of a real live place where you can buy premium merchandise.
Well, can you give an example of some marketing that you were able to do on that movie that people may not even have noticed?
Do you know why the movie is called The Dark Knight?
I'm assuming because the Batman. I don't know why it's called The Dark Knight.
It's called The Dark Knight because when I watch it wearing my custom aviators, I experience about 2 hours and 30 minutes of the dark night of the soul for me, you know. Just thinking about what could have been, you know, sometimes we make these pitches for a product and they don't make it in there. Like, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little emotional.
Mm-hmm, okay.
What I mean to say is not everything that was part of our vision for the film was shared by Chris Nolan. So I'm sorry. Okay. I feel like I got to pop a Zoloft by Pfizer. Breakthroughs that change people's lives.
Is there an example you may have of a good idea that you had that Chris said no to?
Oh my God. How long is this podcast? Do we have like a day to boil it down. I mean,
okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
That guy, you want to talk about Dark Knight? That guy says no to everything, but, he uses those six bone chilling words, doesn't align with our brand strategy. I'm sorry to use that kind of language. It's a family podcast, I know. But
the six words.
So here's an example. The opening sequence, you got this bank robbery, right? Tell me this, Kevin. Why could that have not been Chase Manhattan? Make more of what's yours. I mean, just imagine Chase Manhattan could tell the world, our banks will keep your money safe from everything except a posse of goons and clown masks.
But do you think, like, from a bank perspective, is like, okay, I want to have my money go to the bank who was in a movie of being robbed?
I feel what you're saying. I love the energy you're putting out there. Mm-hmm. But okay, so let's talk about, you know, I mean, it's a movie full of cool stuff, right? It's just mm-hmm. cool shit back to back. I mean, like, come on, the Batmobile. It's okay. It's pretty cool. Imagine how much cooler it would have been if they'd taken my pitch to make it a 2003 Honda Civic.
I hear what you said. So I just want to make sure I get this right. Are you saying he's just riding in a 2003 Honda Civic, or the Batmobile, the base of it is a Honda Civic, but it's still a Batmobile? Or is he just driving in what I can only imagine as gray 2003 Honda Civic?
Well, you know, we want to live in the same world that the character is. So I think it would be sort of customized. It would still be kind of, you know, painted dark, Batman dark, or whatever you want to say. But it's still got the bones of a Civic. It's still got that weird kind of squeaking noise. You know,
the Honda Civic's got the little tires, right? The little tires.
That's right. I mean, you can corner. You can make. You can corner really well with those things.
Yeah. Only you do a lot of drifting in the. In the Honda Civic, I feel.
We'll put a Gotham drift there. Yeah, I'm not going to lie.
What got you into being a brand manager?
You know, I mean, I had a pretty average, I would say, childhood. You know, for an LA kid, I was I was born at Cedars-Sinai Hospital. My first words were, here for LA, here for you. Pretty normal stuff. I went to freecreditcheck.com elementary, went to Mercedes-Benz Bank of America High. If you're a kid out here long enough, you just kind of fall into the business, you know. Actually, there's a law in Los Angeles when you turn 18. By law, you actually have to be drafted into either the film, TV, or porn track. So
okay.
I went with the kind of film and TV marketing.
So how did the draft go? Was it like a letter, or like a everybody dress up, they go sit, and they wait for their name to be called, you know, on the billboard type thing? Like, what kind of draft are we talking here when it comes to drafting?
Well, you have a gentleman come visit your house. Mm-hmm. And they have one of three colors. It's actually done wordlessly, which is appropriate because no one in LA likes to read.
Yes.
So basically, if they come in red, it's film. If it's blue, it's TV. If it's kind of a stained yellowish thing, that's porn. You just know.
Yeah. Yeah, I figured that one would have been the porn color.
We all know the lingo here.
We know the lingo. We know, like, it doesn't matter where you're from. We know the lingo. What were you doing when you got the call saying, we want your assistance on this movie, which probably didn't know it was going to be so monumental at the time, but we want you to be part of this great franchise for branding. What were you doing, and how did that feel when you first got that call?
Basically, they have, you may be surprised, I don't know if I should be revealing this, but they have a series of hydraulic tubes that just sort of lead you from one marketing gig to another.
Jetsons?
They were using 23rd century Honda Civics, I think. They were flying around, I recall.
Okay.
But what happened was, basically, it wasn't my first job. I've worked on a couple of things. So the first one is once the guy with the blue/red jersey arrived at my door, he took me off in his vehicle, and they put me on the set of The Devil Wears Prada. You remember that with before me, they were going to call it The Devil Wears a Sensible Cardigan and Jeans. I was like, nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
That's not going to work.
Seeing it. So I got that Prada stuff going on. And, you know, as in terms with my contract, at the end of it, they inject you with, you know, vitamin supplements. You kind of go unconscious. They put you in the tube. I wake up. I'm on the set of a James Bond movie. And man, that was a good time. James Bond movies, everything's for sale. I mean, did you know this? Even his name, James Bond, it's actually product placement for Gold Bond medicated foot power. Talk about license to kill your toe fungus. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you're just a walking promo. That is pretty cool. So when you think of technology in movies, it always stems from something real. And Lil Birdie told me there was something that was done from a technology standpoint in that movie, from a branding perspective, that has some reality to it. Is there anything you care to explain about that?
Oh, I get what you're putting down here, Kevin. Love the energy. Have I told you that lately?
Yeah, you said it 30 times. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, if you say it, I think our contract said 34 times. So just.
Oh, is that what that was? Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, you got four more. I apologize.
That's why we charge you so much for this interview with me. That was actually one of our big success stories with the movie. They turned down our pitch for Harvey Dent revealing that he's two-faced by spending 10 minutes eating Takis, Fuego, Cool Ranch duos. They turned that one down.
Yeah.
They turned down our idea for the Joker, man. You know, L'Oreal, we had this whole pitch in that that L'Oreal was going to be like the official sponsor of the Joker's makeup, you know?
Was they going to show him the putting on makeup with the L'Oreal?
Yeah, we were going to have him do that kind of like catwalk thing in slow-mo when he puts his makeup on.
Oh, okay.
That was actually going to be about half the movie.
Okay.
Just because of the slow-mo, just because it takes so long to walk down that thing in slow-mo.
Yeah, for sure.
They decided instead to go with, for some reason, like chase scenes and fights.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news is here, there's always a rainbow after the storm. I think that's the expression.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Taste the rainbow Skittles. There was a rainbow here for us, which is that we got this amazing, great product integration I'm super proud of. And it was for Omni Eyes. We've got our eyes on you.
Omni Eyes. I feel like I've heard of that.
Yeah. I mean,
what is Omni Eyes?
That's the thing, is that the brand awareness has just kind of taken off on this, like,
mm-hmm.
it's almost just exploded in a way that you don't even know about it. But basically, this was 2008, remember?
Yeah.
And now that technology from Omni Eyes is being used by law enforcement, every citizen in the country. This is when Batman is using his phone. Remember, he uses everyone in Gotham's phones to kind of create this sort of eyes on the ground so we can find the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a startup company back then by this little mom and pop operation called Palantir.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we got something pretty cool. We loved your help making the world fall in love with it like we are. Cut to, as they say in Hollywood, we've given Batman eyes in all of Gotham. And then the government nowadays is giving eyes into everyone's lives. Success story. Talk about a Hollywood ending.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that, because it's like, you know, my government work and stuff is like, I know we use that and they've used that to, you know what I'm saying, for terrorism and stuff like that and trying to find people and stuff. So it makes sense, because I've heard about it. And,
oh, it's not just for terrorism, cool, Kevin. I mean, like, do you have a cell phone?
Yeah, I got one.
Yeah. So then you've got how many eyes in your pocket, and now so does Dayton PD. You're welcome.
Okay.
Also, you should be very, very ashamed of what we've picked up lately.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'll delete everything in my phone later.
Oh, it's way too late for deleting.
It's too late for deletes.
You're adorable. I love that you're in comedy.
Well, I'm just want to go out there and apologize to Dayton Police Department for all the dick pics.
Funny story that actually kind of got you off the hook, that they were actually into that. So well played.
All right. Well, you know, I don't claim it all. You know what I'm saying? I was born this way. You know, it's pretty cool.
They actually told me, they said, thanks for the little kebs.
Okay. Okay, the little ones. Okay, guys.
Yeah, apostrophe. That was, I want to get the messaging right. Yeah. All about messaging.
Okay, so speaking of like taglines, I feel like it'd be cool to have one where it's like it just has a normal person, like, oh, Kevin, blah blah blah. That's my tagline, right? Mm-hmm. With your help, if you was able to give me a tagline, just based off what you know about me, what do you think it would be?
Kevin will insert himself into your ears. I was also thinking about. Kevin's getting it in your ear holes right now.
Listen, Baxter, I want to thank you for joining us today. This was a great interview, and I feel like we learned a lot. I want to thank you for being with us today.
Listen, man, I don't want you to thank me. I want to thank me.
Okay.
Because I want to control the messaging. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You give away the messaging, you might as well give away.
Yeah.
It'll be like giving away my children, Dolce and Gabbana. Like, I just would never do that. You see what I'm saying? So
are those your children's names?
They were born with even more brand awareness than me, which is, it's really the American dream. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. You can cry here.
I'm going to have to get under Pfizer. We make breakthroughs that improve your lives.
Yeah. I want to thank you again today, Mr. Lucid, for being here. Everybody, this is the Novelizers interview.
Sorry to cut you short. My hydraulic tube's almost here.
Okay. Yeah, you got
to
go.
The next set.
All right.
Randy never sleeps, just like the Dark Knight.
Exactly.
All right. Love the energy, if I haven't said it.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. We've made it to 34. Thank you.
Kevin, get out of my ears.
Huh. That guy was kind of a weirdo, if you ask me. Anyway, thanks for listening. And thanks to our guests, Robbie McGregor, Dave Bluestein, and Rob Kuttner. They're the best. Join us next time when we welcome Mitra Johari and my personal friend, Eric Drysdale, whom I have breakfast with and have other fun times with regularly, not to brag. It's another powerhouse of an episode. I should also say, I didn't book Eric on this show if people think there's nepotism going on.
I wish there would be a little more nepotism, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm not above it. Can I get my sister to be on it?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm doing it. Toodaloo, as they say in Australia. Probably, definitely, because I've been twice. Stephen, did I mention I've been to Australia twice?
You did.
Yeah.
We're going tomorrow, so that'll be three times.
You're going tomorrow?
No, we're going. You and I.
Oh, you and I, yeah.
Yeah, we made plans. You're not backing out on me.
I love going to Australia with you. That's going to be fun. The thing about it, I was there. I saw a kangaroo. I was having lunch with my friend Jim Biederman from Show Business.
Yeah.
We were at like this, I don't know, cafe. It was adorable. And all of a sudden, I look like, and like literally like 3 feet from me, there's just like a kangaroo just hanging out. Those things, they can lift themselves up with their tail.
I don't know what that even means.
You're sitting there, their tail's on the ground, then they're like, boom. They pump their whole body up with their tail and keep like moving around.
That's crazy.
It's like the worm or something, but you know, with your tail or something. I don't know. It's pretty cool.
I have a feeling that if I ever saw a kangaroo in real life, I would be surprised by its size. I don't know if it's going to be bigger than I expect or smaller than I expect, but I feel like my expectations are off.
I feel like it was about the size that I expected it to be.
Well, I guess you have more kangaroo wisdom than I do. No.
Well, I don't know. It was bigger than a cat, but not as big as a gorilla. It seemed fun. I kind of kept my distance because you always hear about how they jump up and kick you.
Yeah.
And I was like, no thanks.
No. We did an improv session once with Dave Bluestein for this show. And we had it all booked. We got it all ready. We figured out all the time zones because he's in Australia. And we go to record and he's like, oh, there's a parrot in my recording studio. And it's very loud. And we're like, okay, I guess work that into your character or something. So he tried, but it was completely unusable because you had this just shrieking bird.
Was it his parrot or was
it
just...
Yeah, I guess if you're doing improv with an Australian, you just assume that there's a large bird, noisy bird in the background, but we didn't...
File under last thing you need.
Yeah, not helpful. But we love Dave Bluestein.
One of the greats. The Novelizers is hosted by me, Dave Hill, with Stephen Levinson, and produced by Stephen, Dennis DiClaudio, Cole Emhoff, Graham Douglas, Kevin Carter, Christine Bolin, Rob Kuttner, and Marla Radner, and distributed by Cincinnati Public Radio. Editing and mixing by Graham Douglas. Music by Cole Emhoff. Theme song by Andrew Lynn, recorded by Knotts. Additional editing by Andrew Lynn and Sunita Haberline. Special thanks to Brad Combs and Parabolic Studio in Manhattan. Follow The Novelizers on Instagram and support us on Patreon. The Novelizers is written and recorded without the use of AI. The Novelizers is an unauthorized work of parody. Copyright 2025, Novelizers, LLC.